Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Nothing like a little murder mystery to spice up your day. You're tuned in to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Well, here we are. The trial of Richard Allen is coming to a close. It may already have by the time you get a chance to watch this. There's so many questions, so many issues with this trial that were not resolved in open court. Many questions about the investigation, about how investigators landed on Richard Allen as their main suspect after many years of searching for the killer of those two girls in Delphi, Indiana. A man that was lost in paperwork, apparently not all that important for all those years until somebody magically found a piece of paper that said, hey, we investigated this guy. Why don't we talk to him again? Because there wasn't a lot of it. Oh, no. No, wait a second. Maybe there is a lot here. Maybe. Or we are desperate to find an answer. That's the question we thought we were going to get the answer to in this trial. We thought maybe there's something behind the scenes. Maybe behind the curtain. They knew more than they were telling us. Turns out they knew less than they were telling us and less than we expected to hear all along. No smoking gun. Less actual physical evidence. Less scientific evidence than one could ever have imagined. We're going to break down this case with three great contributors to our program right now. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent. We're going to go to her first. Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor. And also Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, to get three different perspectives from the FBI, from a defense attorney and a prosecution standpoint, and also from a psychological standpoint. First, let's go to Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent. I'm just going to open it up here. There's two sides. I really want to hear strengths, weaknesses, what you thought. Let's start with the prosecution of Richard Allen, leading right up to those closing arguments that took place today and what we've heard reported. What's your thoughts on how it all went?
I think the biggest disappointment in the prosecution's case, looking at it, was really just the lack of evidence. It's really stunning that this type of murder involving two females, involving clothes, you know, being taken off, a body being reclothed, the use of possibly a box cutter or at least a sharp instrument, and yet no DNA, no fingerprints, not one hair, not one bit of touch DNA, nothing, zero. That connects Richard Allen to these brutal, vicious murders is really surprising to me. In addition, the cellular information, just absolutely a big zero. They have made a big point out of the fact that they collected approximately 20 cell phones of his and not the cell phone from 2017. But they didn't do anything to prove what happened to the phone in 2017. The bottom line is the phone that he had, he specifically gave to law enforcement at the time. It was recorded, the serial number, the details regarding that phone. Law enforcement did nothing to image it or to further investigate that phone, even though he gave it to the DNR individual. So you have kind of a goose egg there in terms of this 2017 phone. I do think it looks bad that it was missing. But did they do any investigation to find out, did he turn it in at that time to the carrier?
Yeah.
I didn't hear anything that was very specific on the investigation done as to where the phone was.
We heard a lot of claims made in this from the prosecution, and then exactly like that, just kind of no follow-up or any context to it. Like, he didn't have the phone anymore. Most people probably don't have their phones from that time, but they did, in fact, have a chance to take a look at it back then. Another piece to this that I thought, excuse me, allergies are horrible right now, was the assumption here that his voice matched one of the people who testified. I believe it was a trooper, correct, that said the voice matched. Didn't quantify that with any sort of like vocal recognition software or vocal matching. Just, yeah, it matches. Kind of in my opinion, it matches. I was kind of shocked by that part and just the way it was presented as if it were a true expert opinion, but it just seems like it was a guy that thought it sounded like.
Well, it's such a great point you bring up, and I'm going to go one step further.
Yeah.
The judge even allowed testimony as to what was said on the tape, and that is just wrong in my opinion. The reason you have the tapes is for the jury, the triers of fact, to consider what was actually said, not for a police officer who could influence them. Mm-hmm. And then you have confirmation bias occur, where this trooper says it, this law enforcement officer says it. So now you have a law enforcement officer saying he thinks is his voice. How much have we really heard from Richard Allen? And anyway, it's totally unscientific.
Yeah.
I can tell you with the FBI, even though we had voice exemplars that we would send up to Quantico, and I did it on multiple occasions, and always the report I got back, if it was a match, was something to the degree of, we can't not say it's him.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, that's what you get. You don't get that it is him. You just get, we can't say that it is not him. That's the best I could ever do. And so what we did to prove a true voice exemplar was we had people who were siblings, parents, best friends, ex-wives get on the stand and testify, because of course they would have heard that person speak for years on end and they can recognize the voice. They did not do this in this case, and I think it's because they couldn't find anybody with any experience or expertise to say that was Richard Allen's voice.
I was just kind of shocked that it was even allowed in just with no qualification to say that. I mean, it would be like, oh, there's blood there that matches his DNA. Like, how? I just know. You know, it's like, no, you don't. You do not know. It was just kind of a stark statement to present to a jury as if it was some sort of expert testimony. Very bizarre.
I totally agree with you. And it's like a handwriting person.
Yeah.
That isn't a handwriting person. Top, and you just say, see, the eye looks the same.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, you've had absolutely zero training in that arena.
Yeah.
And, you know, you haven't seen all of their handwriting, but yes. So I agree. There was a lot let in like that. It was just really opinions.
Yeah.
Not from experts.
No DNA found at the scene. And as you were describing, just how bizarre that is with the amount of handling that seemed to have been done. Was there no DNA found at the scene because they didn't examine things thoroughly enough? Or
was it for another reason? Was there any DNA found at the scene of anyone? I know we had the piece of hair that they looked at, but even that was surprising to hear just someone say initially, well, it's probably one of her family members. We're just not going to look at it. All the whole thing, the whole investigation just seems so bizarre, even if they don't have, you know, a lot of these sort of cases in that area. I don't know, if you watched a detective show, it seems like you'd have a little more knowledge of how to handle a crime scene.
Well, from my understanding, that crime scene was handled so poorly. There were multiple police officers traipsing through it. It was not properly cordoned off, as you would imagine it would have been. Mm-hmm. And so you had a problem with really being able to collect DNA and some of the other information. And recall the hand swipe on the tree that some believed was a rune from the Odins. That hand swipe, which now they're saying was Libby's, at the time, they didn't even take that and do a sampling of it until pretty recently, which was also very surprising. That should have been done at the very beginning of this investigation, because you would never know whose blood that was on there. And so it's just from A to Z, in my opinion. Do I know whether Richard Allen did this crime or not? All I know is there is definitely, in my opinion, reasonable doubt.
Yeah, I think they certainly did a great job of presenting reasonable doubt. I think the prosecution did a great job of presenting reasonable doubt with their lack of evidence, or cohesive evidence. Let's talk about the defense of Richard Allen here as it led up to the closing arguments. What do you think were some of the strong points that they brought up, and what do you think were some of maybe the weaker arguments that were brought into this for what they were allowed to even bring up?
Well, the strongest point was the FBI analyst regarding the digital information, saying that actually there were headphones plugged into Libby's phone, I think for hours, mm-hmm. Until they were removed. That's going to be a big sticking point. And I think it was even asked, how could that happen without a human, doing it? And basically, the analyst said, well, it really couldn't. So I think that's a big thing. However, of course, looking into that, there is an argument that could be made that water causes a similar reaction, for a phone to, register in this way. Could this FBI analyst have been fooled? All I know is that the FBI analysts that I've worked with, this is what they do every minute of their day, mm-hmm. for years on end, and they are good at it. That this is their bailiwick. And so I would be surprised if they were fooled, but there's some confusion, of course, because this phone purportedly never moved. It was mm-hmm. underneath Libby. So how could headphones have been plugged in? So I think they did a good job with that. And I don't think the prosecution came back and really tried to disprove that.
I don't know what you could disprove. I mean, that's the interesting thing. And you actually had two analysts on that phone. The first one didn't even quite understand how the coding worked until the second analyst came in and said, this shows headphones were plugged in. That was kind of a late discovery. Again, another kind of weird thing in this case where, like, well, they didn't know what some of the code meant, so they just kind of left it, and then someone else discovers it later on. There's just a lot of things in this that don't seem to add up, and they're just obvious things of, if you don't know, figure it out. Ask. You had how many years to try and put some of these pieces together? It just makes you wonder. I mean, these are the things we're catching. How much was overlooked that never even made the light of day outside of the offices?
No, I agree. There's just so much. And I thought, if I recall correctly, there were 71 other hairs that were never analyzed. And, they finally did do the analysis on the hair around the pinky finger that ended up being, I believe, the sister's hair. So at least they did some analysis of that. But what about all the other analysis? I mean, you're looking at 7.5 years or so of investigation right in that realm. And this is all we've got. And then also, I was disappointed, I will say, that the defense closed so early. I felt like I was wanting more from them. Mm-hmm. And then I was very disappointed that they did not do a motion to have the gun removed from evidence and that bullet so they could be examined by the tool marks expert mm-hmm. and the medalist, because they both might have been, one was allowed, one wasn't, but it's not very moving, I don't think, when you're looking at a picture. You want them to do the analysis. And I think it came down to money. Judge Gold put them on the tightest money bar I have ever seen. You look at Brian Koberger, he's had seven expert witnesses, and I've estimated around 30,000, 10 to 30,000 per witness. Mm-hmm. And the money just, and they haven't even started trial. We're just doing hearings. And yet they don't have, I think they awarded, it was so nominal what they awarded them to help in their defense, to get experts. Experts are expensive.
Oh, yeah.
They're between, that type of an expert is between $150 to $350 an hour. Other experts are between $250 and $800 an hour. Mm-hmm. And it takes hours to take a gun, go to a range, do all the shooting, or not a range, a laboratory, do all the shooting that's necessary to try to recreate those tool marks, the extractor and ejector marks. And the fact also that it was never retested is just so dropping the ball. And it's a man's life. Yep. Listen, if he's guilty, we all want him to rot. But I have such big misgivings on this case.
Do you think less was more, though? I mean, yes, certainly budget. I totally understand that. But I also wonder if the defense just felt like the prosecution just gave so much reasonable doubt. Let's not introduce anything else that could possibly in some way, shape or form backfire or sway somebody. Do you think they just felt like they had them where they wanted them for their opinion of having reasonable doubt on Richard Allen? And that's where they just decided to leave it.
Well, I think that's actually a very good point for this reason. Number one, I think everybody was surprised. The jurors' faces, at least from the people in the courtroom reporting, said they had a look of surprise and shock on their faces, mm-hmm. right, that they rested. Second of all, I think it caught the prosecution kind of saying, whoa, mm-hmm. you know, in other words, they thought they were going to have more time to prepare rebuttal and so on and so forth. And I think that might be why they didn't do a proper rebuttal on the digital information regarding the headphones. So to your point, was it purposeful? Maybe so. Maybe they said, listen, we're just going to stop right here mm-hmm. and leave it on this headphone issue, which probably had all those jurors shaking their heads. And so it might be a wise move, but Tony, I really do fear that he's going to be convicted.
Well, I mean, I feel like he has the get a new trial free card pretty well in his back pocket, maybe even a stack of them by now. Obviously, it'll take more time. It'll certainly interrupt more of his life if he is innocent. And certainly even worse, the families who just still have to sit there and wait and wonder, is this our guy? Or are we going to keep going down this road if there's a mistrial, for example, after someone that we really don't have a lot of solid evidence against, but there's a lot of other people here out in the ether that seem to have not been very thoroughly investigated. That's got to be such a hard question for those families tonight, as it is in the hands of the jury. They want justice, but I'm sure they want it for the right person to be going away too.
Absolutely. And again, you know, the people who always get lost are the victims. You know, I actually yesterday just did a post on Abby and Libby and just what they were about. They played in the band. Abby played the saxophone. They loved volleyball. They swam. They loved the outdoors. They loved to vacation. They loved each other. Mm-hmm. And loved animals and just all the little nuances and intricacies about these children who had their lives taken in such a horrible, horrible way. And remember, one of those children watched the other child get massacred.
Yeah.
So, just the humiliation of having to clothe, especially at that age, which is an age where you're so shy about your body typically. I mean, they were just so young. And so often, I think the true picture of the victim here gets lost, especially because at this point, people are wondering if Richard Allen is indeed a victim. But I think it's important to really focus also on these two young lives that were taken.
The phone calls that were played in court and the confessions that were played and all the way back to the initial meetings with Richard Allen, with the investigators, where they kind of railroaded him to where he is today. How do you think that played? Was that a win for the prosecution to have all those I did it, but they certainly didn't sound like the cognizant Richard Allen that they had heard in previous recordings? I mean, it clearly did not sound like the same person from every account that I've heard. I know that, you know, on paper, that probably looked pretty good, all these confessions. But when it came to play with the jury, how do you think that played?
Another big point of disappointment, at least for me, I was expecting to hear something like this. You know, I did it. I was out there. I had gotten wind that there were going to be two little girls there. I took my gun. I took my and a description of the knife that was used or the box cutter, and I saw them and I slowly, you know, yeah. I want to hear that kind of detail. Whenever I've heard a confession, they are detailed.
Yeah.
The person has all this independent information that you never knew. For instance, something like if he would have said, and Abby started to run and I got out my gun and I said, if you run, I mean, the detail was so scant.
Yeah.
I felt like he did have a few details. He said, I fumbled with my gun or something. At one point he mentioned, and then he mentioned the van. But I don't know how much really to place on that van because, and I don't think the jury's ever going to know this, but I've seen two, and I have them in my possession. Two, I think one was a Reddit and one might have been a Facebook where they talk about the van. You know, on social media, people are talking about the van and because they were trying to figure out if that van might have been related to a subject at the time. And is that in discovery? Well, it should have been in discovery if it wasn't. And he had the discovery package. And he, you know, Dr. Walla, did she ever mention it? Remember, she was on every social media site available, cutting it up with everybody and their dog about, you know, what had happened. So I don't know if that van is going to be enough, but I can tell you the jurors don't know what I just said.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as far as I know, none of that came out in court, at least to any degree.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just feel like the jurors are working with nuggets instead of working with a meal. They really just have such a small picture. None of them know about Keegan Klein and that morning he was communicating with Libby about getting together. No one knows that or about it being on Richard or Ron Logan's land and Ron Logan's the probable cause that surrounded him and his involvement, his lying about an alibi, getting somebody else to lie for him about where he was at the time. It's really just a travesty that the jury didn't get a full picture of what happened. And then they could make their analysis.
Yeah. I think the best analysis I think I would make at this point, obviously I've had my opinion on this for quite a while, but I've heard nothing that changes my mind. I've heard nothing new that we haven't been discussing for the last many years. It's exactly what we've heard. And nothing that is convincing that doesn't put a ton of reasonable doubt into my mind. And I'm thinking the jury, what they have probably will come to that same conclusion. I don't know. We will, we'll find out here, in the coming days, hopefully. And,
I gotta tell you, Tony, the biggest reason I have doubt, the biggest reason, is for a person to be able to do what he did to those girls. They are a sadistic, you know, sexual child predator, pornographic fiend.
Yeah.
That's the type of person who commits those murders. where is the pornography on the 20 phones? You don't turn it on and turn it off. Even if they don't have the one from 2017, how about all the other devices they have?
Yeah.
Not a hint.
Nothing.
Not a hint
and
something in that order.
And where would be the other witnesses that could come and say, yeah, I had a weird incident with him. Nobody has come. We didn't have anybody. All we had was people that testified going, yeah, he's never done anything weird or sexual or anything of that sort. Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't make sense. I'm amazed what a weak case they have. Retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer, thank you for joining us. Let's continue on the conversation now. This time, let's move over to attorney Eric Faddis, also a former prosecutor practicing out of Denver, Colorado. Eric, thank you for joining us. Let's do the almost same rundown, a lot of the same questions, but from the perspective that you're going to have for us, different than the FBI.
You know, it's a bit lackluster to me, especially when you consider some of the bluster pretrial where they're talking about, oh, gosh, we have 60 plus confessions. That's a slam dunk, right? Well, when we start to hear about the circumstances of the confessions, the timeline of the confessions, and with that, the questions that raises about the reliability of the confessions, I think that is a less strong case. And even when I was talking with Nancy Grace, and she is pretty pro-prosecution, she saw the holes there too. And so if I was the prosecution, I'd be a little worried.
The prosecution came out with a lot of interesting pieces of evidence. They did in fact eventually play some of the audio from Richard Allen and video from behind bars. We've not heard it in the public, but people who have been there have relayed, of course, their accounts of it. They also played video of early interrogations, of early phone calls, of early interactions with Richard Allen. And from everything I've heard from anybody who has been in that courtroom, they sounded quite different from a alert, concerned Richard Allen to a very almost, you know, just robotic Richard Allen saying, I did it. I did it. Not, I didn't do this. I mean, and of course, the story changes from I had nothing to do with this to I did it. Tell everybody I did it. Just, you know, did the prosecution go too far? Did they play too much? They had a lot of evidence, but is that in fact going to kill their case because they're showing every side of Richard Allen here, including a psychotic one?
Well, you know, jurors are pretty smart and they're pretty perceptive. And so if you're showing two sides of the same person that are visibly contrastable. Like you can see the visible differences in his mental state in the early interviews as compared to the later confession statements. I just think that a jury's going to put that together and say, hey, something is different between these two things. Did Richard Allen have a come to God moment and want to get something off his chest? Maybe that's what the prosecution's going to argue. But I think that there are some things in terms of how the confessions came out and the circumstances of them later that the jurors are really going to raise some eyebrows about.
You know, people do sometimes feign mental illness or what have you when they're behind bars. So it can be looked at as, well, they're crazy. There's something wrong with them. But the extremes to which Richard Allen went to, and including their own expert that they brought in, said he's not feigning this. I mean, he's literally eating his own feces. He's eating the Bible. He's running his head into a wall, all while intermittently saying, I did this in a monotone voice and being, you know, basically held captive with no sense of anything on the outside and basically tortured by guards saying and taunting him while he's away. It's kind of understandable why he was in the state that he was. Do you think everybody is going to believe in that jury box that, yeah, he was in fact, he went psychotic because of what they were dealing with and what they were putting him through?
You know, it's tough. Anytime you have a confession that is so hard to overcome, even if it's under questionable circumstance, because, you know, the conventional thinking is, why would a person ever admit to something horribly heinous they didn't do? But when you talk about him being in solitary confinement for a long time, when you talk about him being feeling railroaded, feeling hopeless, feeling like, what else can I possibly do? It starts to make sense. Like, hey, I'm going to tell these people what I think they want to hear. Mm-hmm. Especially as my own mental health is visibly eroding. And so what does that confession really mean at that point?
Yeah. I want to talk about some of the evidence as well that the prosecution brought up. I'm very interested in how they're qualifying some of this evidence, specifically the state trooper that confirms the voice matched Allen. Now, that's his testimony. The voice matched Allen. Is that all it is? Is it just him going up there going, I listened to it. I think the voice matched Allen. We didn't hear anything else, as far as I'm aware, that there was like any sort of technology used to actually verify this. Anybody can just say, yeah, I think this is the guy. That's not any sort of verifiable proof. It's a guy making a claim. But that seems to be what they're sitting on, that it matches Allen's voice in a very inaudible way.
Yeah, I mean, it would be so much more compelling if they did some kind of like audio analysis and they said, hey, here are the pitches of Richard Allen's voice. Typically, you know, you could even do like an AI analysis of his interviews and say, hey, here's the ranges within which he speaks. Here's sort of his cadence. And is the audio from that video consistent with that? But no, it's just a dude up there saying, yeah, it kind of sounds like him.
And that's what amazes me. And that's just kind of like what they're resting on. I've never seen it where it's like this guy, and they're using it in a very technical way, though. It's a voice match. No, it's not. It's someone's opinion. It's a guess. There's nothing that says that. The ballistics is the other thing, and that's being argued on both sides. Of course, the prosecution saying, yeah, look at this. This unspent round really matches Allen's Sig Sauer pistol. The problem with that is it's not a very complete science. Could have been in another gun and, you know, matched that too pretty accurately if it's the same type of gun. How strong do you think that is playing to the jury, and the fact that the jury now knows that that bullet was there after you had 30, 40 officers trampling through the place, and then, they found it then?
Oh, yeah. And you know, this type of ballistics analysis has never been that compelling to me, especially when you hear it in court. It's really a person getting up there and saying, hey, like some marks on the back of this bullet look like what I might expect them to look like from this gun. So it's got to be from this gun. But that's clearly, there's some holes there. And I am not at all persuaded by the ballistics analysis in this case.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of holes, there's just so many holes in the prosecution's case. Were you expecting that they were going to have something up their sleeve that we were just sitting here going, they must have? They're being so bold in front of this case and just denying everybody's motion. It was either they have nothing and they really want everything that could possibly show he's innocent not coming to light, other than what already is going to be there because our case is so weak, or they have something really amazing. It feels like it was the latter.
Yeah, you know, I really expected, especially in this type of an intimate, gruesome murder where there's a stabbing, you would expect some kind of DNA forensics. You would expect that if he brutally murdered and stabbed these and slit the throats of these two young girls, there would be some DNA transfer. There would be some hair that would get on to them, or some of their hair that would get on to him, or some kind of biological connection to what happened, and there is none.
Well, speaking of the hair, that was an interesting point, too. And I think what their explanation was spoke so much to how incompetent this investigation was. You had people just commenting, well, we thought it might be a family member. Everything's up for grabs in a murder investigation. There's no, well, we thought maybe. That just makes sense. No, they're what the hell is that? Where there was so much of that in this investigation, because they did find some hair on the girls, but they tested it far later. The initial reaction was, yeah, it's just, it's family. It's this or that on a body. I mean, what is that? Just inexperience? Is that just, you know, the podunk police department that just doesn't know what the hell they're doing? And they're just trying to do the best they can with what they have, including the limited knowledge and experience they have.
You know, in a high-level murder investigation, you've got to dot your I's and cross your T's, because these are questions that the defense is going to explore if they're good. They're questions the jury is going to have. And so the prosecution, you want to try to answer those questions in advance, anticipate what they're going to be, do the analysis, and have an explanation to give to the jury. Here, they didn't really. It was just kind of like, oh, like we eyeballed some stuff and like, oh, this makes sense to us. So find this guy guilty. That's not enough, man.
Yeah. Let's go over to the defense of Richard Allen. I know we've been kind of arguing that along the way as we talk about the actual prosecution. But yeah, those confessions are a big thing. And having that psychologist come in, who wasn't talking to podcasters, who wasn't researching the case, who wasn't biased, seemed to have a pretty Solid, you know, explanation, a really solid background as well. Who do you think probably read better to that jury, the defense psychologist that talked about him or the one that, you know, had the tainted history?
You know, that's the thing is the defense psychologist is more unassailable. They didn't have the bias or apparent bias that the prosecution side did. And on top of that, it was so critical to have that because, like I said, intuitively, we think, hey, no one's going to confess to something they didn't do. And I thought the defense psychologist did a good job of explaining in a digestible way how that could actually happen after a series of horrible events that Richard Allen has been through.
It's been very surprising to see just kind of how some of these things have played out and what's read better. Initially here when the defense was going in and right before this case started, we were all looking at this going, gosh, it feels like they stripped them of, you know, any defense that they could have. But I guess that wasn't so bad when there's not much of a prosecution either. it turned out both were playing with half decks, it seems, of what they were allowed to, except the defense actually had some real stuff that just wasn't allowed into the case.
Yeah, and you know, that's a big potential problem. So there's case law in most jurisdictions that says that the judge cannot preclude the only defense that defense is running. If they have one sole defense, and here, you know, arguably was the Odinus defense that someone else was involved in this, and Judge Gold prohibited that. Mm-hmm. When you prohibit the only sole defense, that is a real potentially reversible issue on appeal. So even if there is a conviction, Richard Allen still has a number of outs on the backside.
He's got, as I've always been saying in this case, he has the get a new trial free card almost guaranteed. That's if he is convicted. And like I said, the jury may have already decided by now, by the time you're listening to this. But let's say he does get off and they do find him innocent because there's a tremendous lack of evidence here. What kind of case does he have against Delphi for round two of this, where it's Richard against them?
Oh, totally. You know, There are potential civil rights claims that he can bring, that anyone can bring. Mm-hmm. If there is what's called malicious prosecution or abuse of process, and it's really, the government realizing some problems with the case, you know, waiting 5 years to even bring it. And then failing to establish that a person was guilty after he's been held in solitary confinement for God knows how long, he will certainly pursue civil avenues after this, and it could bankrupt the small governmental municipality of Delphi.
It has echoes of the case out of Manitowoc, Wisconsin, the Making a Murderer documentary, Stephen Avery. Yeah. Where there were the accusations of murder against him. He was even found and put away, and then they found evidence that exonerated him, and he got a million-some-dollar judgment against the city. And then the city, you know, that's a lot of money for Manitowoc. It ain't a big place. Been there many times. He killed Teresa Hulbach back here in his junkyard, and we know how that has all been sitting, never having to make the payment on that bill. I don't know. It's just going to be an interesting, it reminds me of that. So I would say to Richard Allen, I'd be a little bit concerned if you do get off. I'd be just kind of getting out of Delphi, maybe do the lawsuit from a distance. I don't know. It just seems like there might not be a lot of up and up police work going on his part there.
You know, you bring up an important point because, you know, we think that, oh, if someone is wrongfully accused and then they bring a civil lawsuit, they're allowed to do that and it's cool, whatever. But the reality is that the government's not going to like that. And they might find some other way to go after him if he tries to poke the bear. So on the balance, is it better off for him to just go on about his life if he is acquitted? Maybe.
You make a very good point. That may be the best option. Eric Faddis, defense attorney and former prosecutor, thank you so much for your insight here on the Richard Allen case. Let's continue on in our conversation and move things over now to Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, and of course, contributor right here to True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's move to the psychological area of all of this and go through similar questions, but now from your standpoint, Siobhan.
I am so pleased at the quality of the experts the defense has brought in, you know, and I have tried to keep a very open mind on this case. It's been a weird case, but I've said for a long time, one of the most core factors, certainly in looking at guilt or innocence of Richard Allen for me, has been the timeline of when his psychotic symptoms started and how that aligns with the confessions, the 60 plus confessions. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I got answers to that. I took pages and pages of notes that now it's been broken down. And what I have learned is that we had a man who entered the prison that he's in with no psychotic symptoms. Mm-hmm. Now, he did have a diagnosis that he had had since childhood of major depressive disorder, which some people with major depression can become psychotic. Mm-hmm. And certainly under stress, they're more prone to it than other people. And we also know that people who are psychotic may very well confess to things that they didn't do. And so when we're looking at, is this a legit confession or is this a false hallucination, delusion confession, we have to know, were they psychotic when they started making the confessions? So we know that the first 4 months, according to Dr. Walla, who was the prison psychologist, Richard Allen was not psychotic. And then after 4 months, he had a religious conversion that happened very quickly. He began sleeping with his Bible and talking about wanting to be forgiven. And it happened like that. Mm-hmm. I think this was in, I believe it was in March. Yes, March 23. That was the beginning of the psychosis for him. And we often see these kind of almost bizarre, rapid fire religious conversions. That can be an early sign of psychosis. And again, not saying that all religious people are psychotic.
Sure, yeah.
But when it happens like this, that's a red flag to me. Now, Dr. Walla, I have a lot of concerns about her at this point, based upon all the things that we've heard. She consistently maintained that when he started with some of the bizarre behavior, he was malingering, which means feigning symptoms for some kind of benefit. Mm-hmm. I think she was wrong. And clearly, over the course of the few weeks after that religious conversion, he became increasingly psychotic. The eating feces, you know, the naked, the masturbating while singing. I mean, just the bizarre behavior. I don't think people eat feces when they're feigning psychosis. I just, I can't go there. Now, I think there's bias within the prison system toward believing people are malingering because they do see a lot of it. It does happen a lot. But I think that can create a biased perception. And I am fairly certain, I'll stick my neck out and say that Dr. Walla was biased. This is also the psychologist who was inundated, you know, with her true crime material. And we know a lot of the stuff online has been painting him as guilty, 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 you know, for a long time now, ever since he was targeted as a suspect.
Yeah.
So I think we had very poor treatment with Dr. Walla. There was no testing done. We can do psych testing that looks for malingering. That was never done. I don't see any excuse for that. I mean, to me, that's, you know, malpractice. Eventually, Dr. Walla did call in her supervisor and another clinical person to look, take a look at him. And that's when they decided, okay, he is psychotic, and let's start some Haldol. They gave him an injection of Haldol. Was that the right medication? You know, not everybody responds to Haldol. It's an older medication. It's cheap. It was worth a try. I don't know that it helped. It may have helped a bit. But he did start to improve over time after he had had another dose and doses after that. So I think there was no question he was psychotic. I think he was psychotic before Dr. Walla understood what was happening. And I think maybe at that point she had difficulty backtracking. So that's why she called in some other people to take a look. And then we had testimony from, it was Dr. Westcott, who's a neuropsychologist, excellent credentials. And she did testing. She spent hours and hours with him, looked over all the records, and ended up with a 127-page report on this. And I think she did excellent work. It was well documented that he was psychotic. He had been psychotic for the, you know, after the first 4 months of solitary confinement. He did have major depressive disorder in addition to the psychotic. He was anxious, and that he was definitely not malingering and hadn't been malingering. Mm-hmm. So to me, this really tips the scale that these confessions are not credible.
Why do you think it is that Dr. Walla didn't, you know, do her due diligence on that until, like, after a while, calling other people in? I mean, you, like you said, it's malpractice at a certain point where it's like, why? I mean, if she wants to do certain tests, can she do them? Does she need a court approval? Does she need investigative approval or something to do that with the client? Or is that up to the doctor at that point?
I am guessing that it was within her discretion to choose to do it or not do it. And it makes no sense to me because I always will look back on, you know, somebody's unusual symptoms. And if I don't understand what's going on, immediately you get another set of eyes on the person, you get some more opinions. And if you can have testing done that's going to give diagnostic clarification, that's the ethical thing that you do. And you fight for that. So this is, I think, a case of malpractice, you know, with the treatment he received in prison. She was seeing him for a long period of time. She was seeing him daily.
Yeah.
But I have real concerns about her possible bias that she had already decided he was guilty and therefore was looking through a lens and a filter that only she only saw what she wanted to believe.
It's scary.
Which is horrible.
The whole case of Richard Allen, we look back on it, and it's just one misstep after another. I mean, there's just so many things that were not done right or ethically in this entire case. Take his guilt or innocence out of it. It's like, could you guys have done a worse job at handling all these things? And what got me about the trial so much was how they were so gung-ho to go into this, knowing the stuff was going to be presented publicly and thinking it was going to be effective or powerful or that no one was going to go, the hell were you doing? Like, none of this was by the book. None of this, like, really adds up. Is that, I mean, was that a product of just kind of a group think where everybody in this small town, they thought they had their guy, they're all kind of working together on this with the prosecution, and they're just la, 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 we're not going to hear anybody else's input, and just plowed forward?
Yeah, the sentence that pops into my head is just not very smart.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a lot of people that just rubber stamp this without looking at the whole picture. And yeah, I'll add, is there still a possibility he did it? Sure.
Yeah.
But do we have reasonable doubt? Hell yeah.
No, a lot, a lot. Another big point that was made here in the trial of Richard Allen, beyond the mental health standpoint, this is right at the very end. And I think it really puts a big question mark into the case of the prosecution. Who put the headphone jack in Libby German's phone 5 hours after her disappearance? There was already the question that the phone became active after the girls were supposedly already dead, according to the official timeline. This shows somebody was using the phone with a headphone jack. And the phone's found by the bodies. So, I mean, that opens everything up. I mean, it could have been the girls if the timeline was simply off on their death. I mean, if they were entrapped somewhere and she had her headphones, she could have easily stuck them on her head. It's a weird one. Like, why would somebody grab her phone and walk around with headphones? Like, that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense in any of this. But it happened, and it's a digital piece of evidence that the phone's not just going to make that up. So something happened there, and the prosecution has presented zero idea on how that happened. It's almost as if it didn't happen, but we know it did. How do you think that's going to play to the jury?
I am, you know, sometimes I'm surprised by what juries do, but this is just one of the weirdest cases I think we've seen. You know, we see a lot of horrible cases. This one is horrible, but it's also got so many weird elements to it that just at this point, from what we're seeing, they don't make sense.
And
that's just another strange piece that it's hard to create a scenario to understand it.
This, it's kind of legally, but I'm not asking for the legal answer to this question. I'm asking more so if someone came to you as a saying, I need an expert witness on this, where if he's found innocent and they go, Oh, he wants to sue the shit out of everyone. How good of a case do you think he has in terms of psychologically what was done incorrectly? I know you used the word malpractice there. Do you think that this would be a pretty strong case for just horrible, wrong treatment where they would be found very, very wrong and owe a lot of money if he's acquitted on this or found innocent?
Yeah, I as you say, it's legal. I don't know that's an option to sue, but ethically,
yeah,
I would certainly encourage that if it were an option.
There was the thing that comes to mind would be the case of To Catch a Murderer, I believe is what it was called. One in Wisconsin, Manitowoc County. I can think of Brian Dassey, the nephew. I can't think of the guy's name at this moment in time. He went to prison for another murder prior to the second one. And they found out, no, it wasn't the guy. And then he sued and won a lot of money from Manitowoc County. And then suddenly, surprise, we think you did a different murder. And that was another one with a lot of questionable evidence as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that Reed interrogation technique with the nephew. I mean, we got to watch that in the documentary, which was just horrifying the way that kid was manipulated.
Yeah.
So,
Making of a Murderer was the documentary, and Stephen Avery. There we go. It was going to bug me until I could think of his name. I'm from up there, so I remember some of that going on back in the day.
Really, really well done documentary that went into so much detail about what went wrong with that.
Yeah, without a doubt. Fascinating case. We'll see where the jury takes it. If this is maybe we're at a conclusion and maybe Richard Allen can try and have some semblance of a life. We'll see where this all ends up in the hands of the jury. Guilt, innocence, retrial, mistrial, hung jury. What's going to happen? We may already know the answer to that, like I said, by the time you're watching this, but a fascinating discussion nonetheless into what made up the Delphi trial of Richard Allen. There's more to come, and we're going to keep bringing it to you as more develops in this case. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening to us or watching us on YouTube. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you are watching or listening so you don't miss any of our continued updates.
In a world where the darkest secrets lie just beneath the surface.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence says otherwise.
Where hidden killers roam unnoticed in the shadows.
I think you would definitely be looking at a blend of toxic, very bad narcissistic personality traits, and they will be vengeful and possibly resort to violence.
Join Tony Bruschi as he uncovers the truth behind the most chilling cases.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence clearly says otherwise.
Each episode, we dig deep into the minds of those who commit the unthinkable.
To your point on narcissism, he thinks in his own mind how witty he is.
Yeah.
But he lost that jury. I was done with him in 2 minutes.
From unsolved mysteries to infamous crimes.
Geez, you've just talked about how you've taught yourself how to do everything under the sun. I bet you did a YouTube video, How to Best Kill Somebody with a Knife.
Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi takes you where few dare to go.
How does someone with such a dark secret go unnoticed for so long?
With multiple new episodes every single day.
We're not just telling stories, we're seeking justice.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
L-E-T-E-N-P-C. Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N, Rakuten.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Life's messy. We're talking spills, stains, pets, and kids. But with Anabay, you never have to stress about messes again. At washablesofas.com, discover Anabay sofas, the only fully machine washable sofas inside and out, starting at just $699. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly, perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Upgrade your space today. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.